Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A simple fact, fewer and fewer American children live in two-parent households, 69% now, down from 87% in 1960. Often it's after a breakup. Separation and divorce produce a lot of new realities. How to parent through them and still give your children what they need? This hour On Point, parenting after divorce. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you created a parenting plan with your ex? How's it going? What are the biggest challenges? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Charlottesville, Virginia is Robert Emery, professor of psychology, director of the Center for Children, Families, and Law at the University of Virginia. His new book is Two Homes, One Childhood, a parenting plan to last a lifetime. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Robert Emery, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
You've got a lot of solutions that come from a lot of experience here. 30, 40 years you spent as a psychologist looking at this, a divorce mediator. We'll talk about what that is. In the book, you say right off the bat, though, you're not painting a rosy picture. You say divorce stinks.
Divorce does stink. It's hard enough to raise kids. And it's really hard to raise kids, you know, when a relationship breaks up or maybe you have a child outside of marriage and you're raising a kid in two homes. And it's a lot of work. And oftentimes you're dealing with somebody who not only do you not feel very good about, but you might hate them. You're tied together by that child you've had together.
Most of all, you write divorce stinks for children. This at the beginning of a book which talks about how to parent well. But still, here's your starting point.
Yeah, you know, reality is a starting point, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to you to think or anyone to think that I'm, you know, painting an unduly rosy picture. It's a hopeful message. I want kids to have a childhood, as it says right there in the title of the book. But it takes work, and it takes extra work when you're raising kids in two homes. And a lot of the work is about not only the day-to-day of rearing kids and working with your ex, but it's fighting your own emotions.
You're using divorce in an interesting way here. You say it's kind of umbrella term, and you want to include in that not just formal legal divorce, but separation or splitting up after living together, or maybe two parents who never lived together at all. All of that you're addressing.
Yeah, you know, it's all about kids who are living in two homes in today in the United States and throughout a lot of the world. Kids live in two homes for lots of reasons. Divorce is one big one. You may be surprised. People sometimes surprised to hear that over 40% of kids in the United States today are born outside of marriage. Sometimes their parents are living together. Sometimes they aren't. But couples who are cohabiting, their relationships break up even faster than marriages do. And so some of the statistics you quoted at the beginning, that leads to an awful lot of children who are being raised in this situation and a lot of parents who are trying to figure out, what do we do?
Give us a sense of your own experience so we can judge where you're coming from as we listen to the advice you're going to share with us.
Yeah, fair enough question. So first of all, I'm the father of five kids. So I've got a little bit of personal experience.
Busy guy.
Definitely in raising kids. And as my kids would tell you, I'm not a perfect father by any stretch. I do my best.
Were you divorced? Yeah,
my first marriage ended in a divorce. You know, a long time ago, my oldest daughter was only 7 years old when her mom and I split up. And so I've lived through a lot of the pain and struggle of divorce myself. I've done and her mom has done and my wife, her stepmom has done, you know, the best we can by her.
And your divorce mediator, what is that? Is that about the process of getting divorced or is it about after the divorce, how to handle parenting issues?
Both. Or either. Mm-hmm. Divorce mediation is when parents who are having an issue either at the time their relationship breaks up or, you know, maybe later on when something's happening in their life, they're debating about a common issue these days, you know, going back to school, where the kids should go back to school. And instead of, if you can't work it out on your own, which of course is always the number one goal, is to work it out on your own. But if you can't, rather than automatically going to lawyers and treating each other like, you know, opponents and maybe even getting into a formal legal battle, you know, a mediator is an impartial third party with expertise, oftentimes the mental health profession, maybe in the law, who'll sit down with you together and try to help parents to work out their own resolution to what to do with whatever the issue is, whether it's sharing time with the kids, making day-to-day decisions, like I say, going to school, those sorts of things.
So, I mean, you say a couple things here. You say, one, children should not be defined by divorce. And we'll talk about your advice on how to parent so that that doesn't happen. You also say children do not have to be defined by their parents' romantic relationship. What do you mean?
Yeah, so we hear terms, you know, commonly in the newspaper, the media, all the time. You talk about children of divorce or children from broken homes. You know, and I hate those terms. It's as if, you know, a child is defined by something that happened to their parents' relationship. You know, and you're forever going to be a child of divorce. And I don't want that for kids, and I don't think parents want that for their kids. You know, I want whatever your family circumstances are, I want kids to be just kids, not kids of something, and not kids of divorce, not kids of broken homes.
So what's the heart of your advice? Now people have children, and they have two homes, and they share these children, and they have the challenge of giving them, as you say, two homes, one childhood, a good childhood, the only one they'll ever have. Where do you start with people looking at how to do that successfully?
Yeah. The starting point is a good question because there's, you know, lots of answers of how do you raise kids in two homes, you know. But I think the starting point is doing your best to see your child's point of view, which is going to be different from yours. And you know, my simple advice, but I don't think it's so simple to do either in practice, is, you know, I want parents to be parents so that kids can be kids. And what that advice really means is I want parents to do the things that parents do. You mostly put your own emotions second to your children's needs. You take responsibility for your life circumstances, for making decisions, for guiding and protecting kids, for not putting kids in the middle of your stuff. And if you can do that, you know, your kids do get to be just kids, not kids of divorce, kids of broken home. Easier said than done, but that's the goal.
Parents be parents. Where do people go off those rails? What would be parents not being parents?
You know, parents being people, parents being hurt
parents
lovers.
Parents have to be people, right? I mean, they're also going to be people.
Yeah. You're allowed to be people, yeah. But parents being people who are overcome by their own pain and own hurt and anger from the breakup of a relationship, overcome by their own loneliness and uncertainty and you know, too often parents put kids in the middle of their stuff. You know, they expose kids to their conflicts. They tell children bad things about their other parent, which is criticizing your children's DNA. Mm-hmm. They say you don't have to listen to him or her. They argue in front of them when they're exchanging the kids. And, you know, that's not letting a kid be a kid. That's putting the kid in the middle of grown-up stuff, not kid stuff.
So let's put it in positive terms. Let's say a split up has just happened. It's fresh. There are children, and they could be, you know, they could be infants, toddlers, grade schoolers, teens, beyond. How do you tell people to begin to think after a breakup about how to continue to be effective parents?
Yeah, well, it's of course it depends a lot, as you say, on the age of your child. But you know you're focusing on your children's needs, and you know your children's developmental needs haven't changed. If it's a toddler, the toddler needs love and care and building up an attachment relationship. If it's an adolescent, the child needs to be focusing on his own life mostly, with still some guidance in the background and with parents who are giving at least pretty similar advice. So again, the idea is doing what you know you should do, but which sometimes we get lost in doing in the morass of our own emotion.
And you say you've got to be ready to change your plans as things roll forward. The age of children aren't static, and neither can your parenting plans be.
Yeah, that's another big message of the book. So part of the message is to preserve kids' childhood, and the other is that, you know, the only parenting plan that's going to last a lifetime is one that grows and changes along with children's and families' changing needs. So, you know, a lot of parents and sometimes the legal system seems to say, okay, we've got to come up with a plan that's going to work now, and this plan's going to stay the same for 18 years. And I look at that and I hear that and I think, wow, first of all, not only does that make sense, you know, what's going to work for a 2-year-old isn't going to work for a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old. But also, what pressure on parents to think that the plan you've got to come up with now has got to stay the same forever. I take the approach, let's look at this like parents, not as litigants. So let's kind of come up with a plan that's going to work, depending on the age of your child, for the next 6 months, if you're talking about an infant or a toddler, maybe for the next year or so, if you're talking for an older child. And if everything's going fine, you stick with the plan. But if things need to change as your infant becomes a toddler, as your toddler becomes a preschooler, as your preschooler enters school, let's sit back. Let's go to the mediator. Let's talk to each other first. If we need outside help, we'll get it. And, you know, tweak the plan. You don't have to throw it out, but tweak it.
I've never been through this. Are the courts open to that kind of tweaking, or do they give you one solution and once and done?
The courts are open to it as long as parents guide their own decisions. You know, what courts don't like, because honestly, judges aren't sitting there with magical answers for parents. What they don't like is parents coming back over and over to courts and saying, you know, in a dispute, what do we do now? And now what do we do? So courts really throughout the United States, throughout the world, are doing what I'm doing, which is encouraging parents to make their own decisions, to do these things for themselves. So in many places, courts sponsor mediation programs. In parts of the country, it's mandatory that you try mediation before you can get into a court, because courts want parents to make their own decisions.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about parenting and divorce and how to parent effectively, successfully, through and beyond a breakup. My guest is Robert Emery. He's professor of psychology at the University of Virginia, divorce mediator, and author of the new book, Two Homes, One Childhood, A Parenting Plan to Last a Lifetime. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us today. Is this you? Is this your life? Did you have one game plan when things blew up, mandated by the courts, that you just stuck with through thick and thin? Have you tried to be flexible, mix it up? And what is hardest about all this? What makes it easier, better for the children? And of course it matters. I mean, here's a video released by the Child of Divorce, Inc. It's a young boy reading a letter written to his divorced parent. Here's a clip from that video.
When you fight over me or put me in the middle of your argument, you are sending me the message that winning with each other is more important than my life. I am learning from you that it is better to be right than to be loved. You are teaching me that I came from a person who is unlovable and wrong, and that I am somehow wrong too.
Everybody finds their own way. Here's the actress Gwyneth Paltrow. She was talking this summer with the BBC's Stephen Sacker about what it's been like to raise a family since her conscious uncoupling from husband Chris Martin of Coldplay in 2014. Paltrow.
You have to put aside quite a lot in order to maintain that commitment to stay a family for the sake of the children and the practicalities of what that means. Sometimes it's quite tough on a personal level, but it's a commitment that I make every day to my children, that I adore their father and that we're in a family, even though we're not in a romantic relationship.
But of course, it's not always easy in getting it going. This is from Bravo TV show, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. Exes Jake and Abby set up rules to co-parent their children. Here's a scene where Abby, this is Lisa Edelstein, asked Jake, played by Paul Edelstein, what he and the kids will be doing on their first night in his new apartment.
So what are you doing tonight that's so much fun?
Hookers and blow, obviously.
Obviously.
Becca Riley's not coming over, if that's what you're asking.
We just had an agreement.
Yes, I know, the rules. Don't try to buy the kids' affections. Don't trash the other person. No meeting significant others till they're actually significant. I got it.
The rules, exactly what those turn out being. Robert Emery writes a lot about it in his new book, Two Homes, One Childhood. I want to go to our callers. We've got a lot to talk with you about as well, Dr. Emery. Clint in Nashville, Tennessee. Clint, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling. I've been listening to your show, and And I think I'm hearing a lot of really great things. I've been struggling as a parent. My son's 2 years old, and he was born in a relationship outside of marriage. You know, his mother and I were in a short, non-committal relationship, and when he was born, by the time that he was born, she was in another relationship with another man who she's now engaged to. And, you know, my struggle has been that we've been to court now 4 times in 2 years, and problems get worse and worse. Each time that I begin to try and open up with her and we have a dialogue, it seems as if we're starting to communicate. And then I find out after a few months what's really been happening is that she's been fishing for information to contort into an alternate narrative, create either completely fictitious allegations or totally taken out of context ones, and bring me back to court. She usually waits until I'm in financial difficulty or something, you know, and have other stressors in my life. And it's very deliberate and malicious, you know, and she's going after me. She wants to have me removed from my son's life so that her new boyfriend, with whom she just bought a new house, and her can be the happy little family with a white picket fence. Clint, the one for me is
yeah,
money.
Yeah, Clint, let me ask you, what do you expect exactly? What's your expectation of what's right after a short, non-committal relationship that produced a child? What rights do you expect as the father?
Well, certainly my legal rights to have a relationship with my son, and I have been able to spend time with him, and we have a parenting plan ordered by the court where I have him 3 days a week. But I just got a call from my attorney yesterday that she's filed another motion. We're going back to court. She wants me to have supervised visitation only. She claims I'm a raging alcoholic, that I bring him to daycare in dirty clothes, that I have cold sores, and she saw a little bump on his lip 6 months ago, so she literally wrote in a court document that she thinks I gave him a herpes simplex.
Yeah. Clint, let us pick it up, and I wish you luck. I really do, and I appreciate your call. Robert Emery, what do you say to this circumstance?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to have a simple answer for the caller. I hear, you know, incredibly complicated situations like this about this all the time. And at least from his side of the story, and one thing I've certainly learned is there's always two sides of a story,
yep,
at least.
Yep.
But from his side of the story, it sounds like the woman he was involved with is making a mistake in trying to get him out of his son's life. Again, this is from his side of the story. You know, what I'd suggest that he wants to do is keep doing what it sounds like he's doing, which is, you know, to hang in there with his son. If he's seeing him 3 days a week, he's building a relationship with that boy. And while she may not want to have a relationship right now with the guy she had a messed up relationship with, you know, sooner or later, you know, you got to hope she's going to realize she wants her son to have a relationship with his father.
How do you put this up against the what's best for the child template, which is at the heart of your book? I mean, she's saying, as Clint describes it anyway, that, look, I'm going to marry this other guy. We had a very short, as Clint himself describes it, non-committal relationship. I want this new guy with whom I'm buying a house and getting married. I want him to effectively be the father.
Yeah. So, eventually, if this new relationship comes to be, the son will have a relationship with him, but he won't be his father. You know, the boy has a dad. Your caller is his dad. And kids want relationships with their parents, with both their parents. You know, they may live in two homes, but, you know, they do have two parents who are living separately. Again, hopefully the new man can get involved in his life, you know, slowly. But I certainly would hope, if she's listening, I hope she'd take it to heart that, you know, this woman does want her son to have a relationship with his dad. I'd also say, because there's always another side to the story, that it's always a good idea for your caller and anybody else who feels like they're getting the short end of the stick to take a look at what they're doing, because usually they're not perfect.
Talk about court mandates here and how those tend to set a trajectory for parenting. Do you find by and large that courts do a good job? What do you – is there something that you recommend or have couples go for? Or I guess they're not couples anymore, but, you know, joint custody or otherwise. I know it depends on personal circumstances, but What's the best legal foundation for a successful parenting relationship when in two homes?
You know, courts do the best job they possibly can, and you know, it's a hugely difficult position for a judge to be in to make a decision in these cases, or for us to decide as a matter of legal policy what we want to do. Do we want to have joint custody be the default? You know, or what circumstances do we want? You know, the problem is that it's the wrong place to be working these things out. You know, you can't expect to have, you know, that a judge who hears, you know, not the best information about you, not the most accurate information, but actually the worst information about both sides, mm-hmm. to have some magical answer for your family. It's just not there. You know, I think there's an interesting comparison, and I talk a little bit about this in the book, mm-hmm. is we don't let married parents sue each other.
Sue each other. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't let married parents take each other to court. We say to married parents, no, you guys got to work it out. And there's been cases where married parents have tried to sue each other, and courts throw it out because they said, you know, no end of difficulties are going to arise if we start telling parents how to regulate the internal affairs of their family, because the courts know it's the wrong place for married parents. Well, we're living in an era where there's almost as many parents living apart as there are parents living together. You know, courts aren't the place for that either.
So paint the ideal, and I don't know how you begin to do that, but give us a sense, your sense of the texture or the structure of at least an ideal approach to parenting when there are one childhood and two homes.
Yeah, you played a little segment from Gwyneth Paltrow a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. and you know that's one sort of attempt to really put the kids first. You know, if you look at it as you know a heartfelt statement, which I do, you know, she's really trying to unconscious coupling. I know people don't like that phrase.
Or conscious uncoupling is what she used.
Conscious uncoupling. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Yes, thank mm-hmm. you. But she's really trying to do this with a focus on her kids, and you know, and I think it's really important for you know people that others look up to, whether they're you know public figures or actresses and so on, to set an example because actually, let's be honest, you know, working together with somebody who has just devastated you emotionally mm-hmm, mm-hmm. is not your natural impulse. Your natural impulse is to want to kill him.
How do you do that? What's the structure? She said, Gwyneth Paltrow says she wants to maintain a commitment to stay a family for the sake of the children when they have uncoupled. So what does it mean to be uncoupled but stay a family?
You know, there's not a one-size-fits-all that does this. You know, you mentioned it. Many people have shared joint custody today, both sharing decision-making and sharing time with their kids. You know, that's a great plan for – especially for parents who are working together because kids do get to have two parents still and time with both their parents. You need to find some way to at least communicate in a structured way with the other co-parent to find out what's going on at your house. What medications are your kids taking? You know, what extracurricular activities are we going to enroll our son in now that and our daughter in now mm-hmm. that fall's rolling around? Mm-hmm. So you need to, you know, those are the sorts of things that you need to coordinate. You know, really what you need is, you know, you don't need to be friends. You know, I think it's unrealistic for many people to think they're going to be friends. Mm-hmm. But what you need to do is you need to at least be business partners. You know, treat each other with the same politeness and respect and emotional distance. You know, you don't have a relationship to resolve with this other person, but you have a job to do, and that job is raising your kids.
Marcy in Miami, Florida. Marcy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. We have a bit of a unique situation in that I was divorced when my son was 2 years old. I remarried. His father remarried. Mm-hmm. Then my remarriage took me to Canada. So it turned into an international custody situation. However, through all this, we didn't have to go to court. We never went to court. We hardly even used a lawyer through this whole time. Even when I was moving to Canada with my son, we decided, you know, I wasn't going to deprive my ex of my son at all. Mm-hmm. Every summer he had him, every holiday he had him. And the beautiful thing was when my son was 10 and I was divorced the second time in Canada, he said, you know, I want to see a child psychiatrist. So we took him. And the deal was he told the psychiatrist he wanted to go live in the States with his father and his stepmother and his sisters. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know how to tell us because he didn't want to hurt us.
Right.
Well, it was the hardest decision I ever made, but I let him go. And then again, we were back to, he came to me in the summers, he came to me on the holidays. And then when he came to me in the summer in Canada, I had to share him with stepdad. Again, no lawyers, no mediation. It was just four adults acting like adults and doing what was best for our child.
How's it worked out, Marcy? How's it worked out?
Well, he's 32. He's happy. He's well-adjusted. He has close relationships with three out of the four of us. He never quite cared for his stepmother, but, you mm-hmm. know, that's another mm-hmm. story. He lived with her. I think he didn't care for her because she was tough on him, and that's what he needed. So I had no problems with that. Nobody ever bad-mouthed anybody else. As he got older, he was able to realize that, you know, his parents weren't perfect. Stepdad wasn't Disneyland dad, and I wasn't Disneyland mom. Mm-hmm. We all had our issues, and I think as he got older, he understood what had happened, why there was so much upheaval in his life. But I'm just grateful and blessed that we never went through the legal system. It saved us all a lot of money. The three of us, dad, stepdad, and me, paid for his college education mm-hmm. together mm-hmm. without even question. The bill came, we split it three ways. And it was wonderful. And I would like to believe that my son is well adjusted. He's not married. And I said to him, have we ruined you for marriage? And he said, no, I'm just a little pickier, Mom, than probably other people.
Maybe understandably. Marcy, I appreciate your sharing that story. Robert, what do you hear in that? A lot of goodwill there and readiness to roll with changing circumstances as the child grew up.
Yeah, I love what that caller had to say and thank her for calling up. And I guess I hear two things that I really want to underscore is that, first of all, that's a great example of parents being parents, right? You know, they're making the tough decisions. And from what she said, she was faced with a lot of tough decisions, including some time having her son with her most of the time, and other times, you know, having him away from her most of the time. So, you know, so, for other listeners, you know, that's exactly what I mean. The other thing I hear with just all the complications that you heard in that story, international and kids going back and forth, is a good example that one size doesn't fit all, does it, right? Hard to say what's the best arrangement for this family? Well, it's a work in progress. And that's what I mean. Your plan has to grow and change as your needs change.
Parents are imperfect people. As Marcy says, children come to understand that. But what is essential and what's sort of not, or what's maybe not so great but forgivable?
Yeah, well, so one thing you certainly want to do is as much as possible, and again, nobody's perfect, but keeping kids out of the middle of adult stuff. And if kids can be in a relatively normal, happy family environment, it's pretty basic what kids need, right? Oh, kids need to be loved. That's number one. And if you can be loved by both parents, you can be loved by a step-parent, you know, extended family, that's all the better. And of course, as the caller also said, kids need some guidance, some discipline. You know, no is not a dirty word. No actually is an act of love, because no is harder to say than yes. So, you know, psychologists call that combination of love and guidance authoritative parenting, and that's really what kids need.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about parenting and divorce and how to parent through and beyond a breakup. My guest is Robert Emery. His new book is Two Homes, One Childhood, A Parenting Plan to Last a Lifetime. You can join us. Have you been? Were you the child parented through this? Where did your divorced parents get it right? Where did they get it wrong? What's your question for Robert Emery on how to handle child rearing when the couple breaks up? Robert Emery joins us from Charlottesville, Virginia. He's at the University of Virginia there. Nazarene is calling from Woodbridge, Connecticut. Nazarene, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to share two things, which is, you know, I come from a home where my parents, one lived in another country and one lived in the U.S., and I often would say that America is my father and Haiti was my mom, because I grew up in that kind of a home, and there was no stigma about it. It's just that there were a lot of other kids in the neighborhood whose parents were also overseas, working or doing whatever they were doing. Being that I am divorced myself, and it's not a bad divorce in the sense that we do get along, and I'm remarried, and we all try to make it work for the kids. But at the same time, I just want to say that I do know a lot of families who are together but have terrible relationships, but they don't get divorced. A, they're afraid of what might do to their children, and they're afraid of the stigma of being divorced. And for me, I'm more interested, I think, in the people who do stay together, who are not doing any good for their kids, who are ashamed of divorce, and their homes are broken, and their kids are still in that home. And I think it's more damaging for kids who grow up in a home where two parents hate each other than be divorced. So I don't know. So I just wanted to hear your take on the damage that causes, as well as maybe divorce can as well. But I think that, to me,
we got it, Nazarene. Let me take it to Robert Emery. What about it? You've no doubt seen, you know, marriages in trouble, and then couples who have separated, and Nazarene is as concerned about kids who are in troubled marriages as in uncoupled couples.
Yeah, she absolutely has a point. So that parents who are living together, married or otherwise, aren't necessarily being parents, right? They can put the kids in the middle of their stuff, and so she's absolutely right that the being torn, the inconsistent discipline, the just being around constant fighting happens when parents are living together as well. And in fact, recognizing that this can be destructive for children is one of the reasons why divorce laws got easier over the last 30, 40 years, is because just gutting it out in a really unhappy relationship isn't doing kids a favor otherwise. That said, some parents actually, even if they're not very happy, are able to put their kids first in a two-parent family. And then if that's your circumstance, that's a trickier situation, whether you should be staying together or not. But again, coming back to the main point, it's all about kids. It's all about finding a way to put kids first.
Take us through the evolution. You talk about parenting plans that would change as a child grows from infancy through toddlerhood and on. Give us a sense of what kind of changes divorced parents might consider as a child is growing up, the different arrangements.
Yeah, so you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book, Tom, is because I want parents don't know what to do, and I want to give them some guidance and some advice. And you know, I would love to think that my book is a little bit like a Dr. Spock for parents living in two homes. If people remember the Dr. Spock advice book for new parents, except it goes from infancy up through young adult life. So to answer your question, take an example that's a really tricky issue and one where professionals disagree. What if you split up when your child is a baby? How should you be sharing time with a baby? There's some people who are saying, well, the baby should be going back and home, forth between homes every night, which, the idea is that way they're going to have a relationship with both of their parents. And that idea, the idea of having a relationship with both your parents makes sense, but I'm not sure I want to put a baby through that sort of change day in, day out.
So what do you recommend?
So now if you think about something that's going to grow and change, so with a baby, maybe you have the baby living mostly with one parent, fostering a secure attachment relationship with them, seeing the other parent, several times a week, occasionally for an overnight. Mm-hmm. But then when that 6-month-old becomes a year, those overnights become more regular. When he becomes a toddler, you're having a couple overnights in a row. by the time he's a preschooler, maybe you're dividing the school week. And then, you know, you've worked your way into a 50-50 sharing plan in a way that's responsive to the child's developmental needs, rather than just saying, hey, I need my share. I need my 50-50.
How common is that? How often do you see couples actually exercising that kind of evolution in their custody or the way they share the child in parenting?
Yeah, you know, more common than you think, and particularly, you know, I've done studies of comparing, you know, custody disputes that are mediated or litigated, and if you go to court and you go through all the work that takes, people are much less inclined to make a change. They're like, I don't know, way we can't change anything. I'm afraid. I don't want to go through this again. But if you work things out, like your other caller had talked about, the parents were all talking to each other with a mediator or with something called collaborative lawyers, where lawyers try to work together with each other as opposed to bringing you into court. People are much more likely to be flexible, and you know, keep in mind, we always hear about the nasty, the messy divorce cases, but that's the minority. You know, most people, the ones we don't hear about, are working it out, are finding ways to put their kids first, are finding ways to be parents.
Jerry in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for calling, Jerry. You're on the air with Robert Emery.
Hi, Tom. My situation involves two homes which are 3 hours apart. About 3 years ago this week, I expected the boys and my ex-wife to be back and start school. And I went to my office, and there was a sheriff with a complaint, divorce complaint. And the divorce complaint said that they were living 3 hours away. And after hotly contested litigation, the boys were 9 and 10 then. They're 12 and 13.
Yeah.
Now, the arrangement we have is I see them every second weekend, some holidays, and 2 weeks in the summer. It is very difficult for me to deal with that amount of time and that distance, not knowing their friends, their teachers,
sure,
or participating in a meaningful way in their life. And that's what I'm struggling with, because the time that I do spend with them seems artificial in some ways.
Robert Emery, get in here with Jerry. How do you begin to deal with this kind of circumstance?
Well, you know, I think the first thing that I would say to him is that, you know, his time with his boys, even though it is limited by a really difficult circumstance, you know, is important to them. And, you know, it's sad, it's frustrating, it feels artificial. But, you know, what is important for the boys is not any one weekend or not the artificiality of it, but is that, you know, dad is hanging in. Dad cares about him. Dad is making the effort to spend time with them. And, you know, in the future is difficult to predict. You know, they're tweeners right now. Dad's hanging in there with him. He's being a good dad. He's not causing problems. Who knows what the boys are going to want to do when they become 14, 15. You know, your earlier caller talked about her son wanting to switch custody and go live with dad when he got to be that age. Maybe that will happen if he hangs in there with him. If that doesn't have to be the goal, though, if he hangs in there with him, what his kids will know is dad loves me.
What do you say? This isn't just two homes. This is two homes in two cities, 3 hours apart. I mean, we know, you know, jobs and circumstances move people, but how do you maintain that mutual parenting when you get the geographic distance factor in there?
Yeah. Again, that's one of the trickiest issues that come into play. And without knowing the circumstances, you know, you could talk about little things like, you know, Skyping and FaceTiming with the boys and keeping in touch that way. You can talk about longer term things like, you know, is it possible for one of the parents to move so that they're living closer together so they can really raise their kids together? You know, stranger things than that happen. And again, it's like I said, or maybe the boys are going to want to go and live mainly with dad down the road. There's lots of possibilities. And I've worked with many parents who have planned moves together, who found ways to bridge that distance. And like your caller said, it's hard, it's painful to do. But, you know, in the end, it's the right thing.
Hang in there, Jerry. Give them your love, Robert Emery says. And I appreciate your call. Rosie in Miami, Florida. Rosie, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Mr. Emery. I myself am an adult of divorced parents. My parents got divorced many, many years when I was small. I do recall feeling that I was never involved in any of their battles or what have you. I would always be picked up every weekend by my father, and holidays and things like that. I'd spend part of it with my mom, part of it with my dad. So it was evenly shared. But I do recall never splitting 4 days and 3 days, 3 days and 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I really believe that judges, I hope judges are listening, because that is very, very destructive to the child. That 3, 4 day, 4 day, 3 day. As a teacher, I see the kids coming to class and I was at my dad's house these past 3 days. Next week I'll be 3 days at my mom's. And it's this completely, I believe children need to have stability, and weekends would be much feasible. As to share like they used to when I was a kid.
But the idea of fully splitting the week, 4-3, 3-4.
That's crazy. The kid has to have a time for coming to school, from school,
yep,
having their snack, having their homework, you know, doing their thing. Some play sports, others dance, so on and so forth. And that 3-4 thing is crazy. That's lunatic.
Rosie, let us go there. Let us go there. Robert Emery, what about the quality or the nature of the time split and what you see in different arrangements?
Yeah, so obviously there's a wide range of opinion about this. You know, joint custody has been going on for about 30 years. And there's, you know, a decent body of research now that actually tells us, I understand the caller's concerns, that on average, that as long as the parents are getting along reasonably well, kids actually do better in some sort of joint custody arrangement. It doesn't have to be exactly 50-50, but where they have a lot of time with both of their parents.
And, are you arguing then with Rosie's assertion that 4-3-3-4 is bad?
It can be. It's tricky to manage. But I'm saying, you know, on average, kids actually do better despite the complications. Again, you got to think of something that grows and changes, because, you know, a 10-year-old might do fine with something like that. But by the time they're a teenager, they don't want the back and forth because there's a third schedule to worry about, which is their own schedule.
Yeah. Wendy in Broomfield, Colorado. Wendy, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
We had one of the first joint custody, shared custody arrangements back in 1981 in California when my daughter was 8. I had divorced her father when she was 1 year old, and I got custody and he had visitation.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very hostile divorce. By the time she was 8, he kept threatening to take me to court to get full custody. I finally said, look, here's the phone number. Well, he called them. We ended up in a mediation session. They interviewed us together. They interviewed us separately. They interviewed our 8-year-old daughter. My daughter said, I want to live equally, a week at dad's house and a week at mom's house. And then when we had another meeting, they said, this is what your daughter wants. He was furious. He thought I'd put her up to that.
Mm.
So I know it wasn't his idea, and I wasn't really in favor. But the only thing we ever agreed on was doing what was best for our daughter.
How'd it work out, so Wendy?
At age eight, she went a week to his house, and then took the school bus to school, and then she walked to school and back from our house. She came home her senior year full time to our house.
Mm-hmm.
She is 43. She is a college graduate. Her father died 2 years ago. She had constant contact her whole life. She's successful. She's a wonderful mother.
Good.
And I just moved out here to be near her and the grandkids. Ironically enough, while I was called back, hitting the buttons to call you back, I accidentally hit her speed dial. And I asked her about this. I said, well, there's this radio program and da-da-da, and how do you feel about it? I said, do you think, because they had a very difficult relationship also, I said, do you think I should have taken you away when you were an infant? She said,
from your father, her father.
She said, never, yeah. And I said, heavens no, you should never take a child away from their parent. And I said, well, how do you feel about your joint custody experience? I used to be a counselor, so how do you feel? You know? And she said, you know, I don't think about it. You think about it more than I do. It was my life. I lived it. I loved my father. You know, it's just, it's part of who I am. So I really want to support this joint custody, shared custody idea. It worked. When she was a year old, when I got the divorce, the judge had said, custody shall be changed according to the child's needs, so the child should grow up to love both her mother and her father.
That's quite a story, Wendy. I appreciate your sharing it. I mean, in a way, Robert Emery speaks exactly to your point there. Both parents fully engaged over a long time, and the child saying, that's my life, and it was good.
It sounds like it was. And good for her.
Robert Emery's new book is Two Homes, One Childhood, A Parenting Plan to Last a Lifetime. It's been great having you today, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today, and good luck whatever your arrangements are. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.